God is invisible, that he is absent from the world, that he might not be active right now. Do you ever wonder how we should act in a world where others seem more powerful, where governments seem to be in total control, where God's people get sidelined? Did you know there's a Bible book all about that? Over the next few weeks, I'm going to be sharing my sermon series from the book of Esther. Esther's a book where God's name doesn't even come up once, but when we look carefully, God is extremely active. It's a book with conspiracies, misuse of power, supposed coincidences, relationships, and far more. Are you intrigued? Well, let's dive in, shall we?
Esther chapter 2, verse 21 to verse 23. During the time Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway, became angry and conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. But Mordecai found out about the plot and told Queen Esther, who in turn reported to the king, giving credit to Mordecai. And when the report was investigated and found to be true, the two officials were impaled on poles. All this was recorded in the book of the annals in the presence of the king. Have you ever found yourself asking the question, if God exists, why isn't he more obvious? It's a question that many of us have pondered at some point in our lives. We hear stories of miracles, of mighty acts. We read them in the Bible. We tell them to the kids. Things that happened in the past. But in our everyday lives, it can seem, can't it, that God is missing. We live in a world where some argue that there is no design, no purpose, no good or evil, just mindless, pitiless indifference. I mean, it's quite a bleak perspective, isn't it? And it is understandable that it might lead us to question whether there is anything more to life than what we can see. What if there is more to the story? What if there are signs of God's presence that we're missing because we're not looking carefully enough? See, the book of Esther is written into that situation, a situation that seems, well, quite harsh, a situation that seems bleak, a situation that seems, that is, the same as the world we live in. As we hear from those who say all the time there's nothing more than the material world, we might find ourselves being tempted to believe that, wondering if that is really all there is. But if we're trained to see, if we know what we're looking for, we can see things that make us question that view. What some people might call coincidences. That's what we're thinking about this evening. Coincidences in a world missing God. I mean, is that all there is? Is that simply all they are? Is there something more? Where is God in this world that is missing God? Could it be that he's working behind the scenes, even at the moments when he seems most absent? See, our author this evening wants to suggest that God, although he may be hidden, he might be hiding, he might be hiding his face, that is, Estering, but he is working all things towards his planned goal. The author here wants us to question what God's action looks like in the world. As we get to the end of Esther chapter 2, in this short, strange story here, we're given a chance to reflect on that question. And there are three ways in those three verses that the author hints that there's something more going on. Three ways that we can take and we can see in our world today. Three ways that are going to change our Monday mornings as we come to them tomorrow. Now, I have quite an affection for TV mystery shows. I think the BBC hit their peak, it's been downhill ever since, when Jonathan Creek was on TV. The big premise was that something weird had happened. It was usually a murder, but you'd see the results. But the fun came from asking who done it. Events occur, but we're left thinking to ourselves, well, someone must have caused them, even if it was that episode where the ape had poisoned the man through the stamp collection. There you go. It's the same though in our passage this evening. As you go through Esther, you're meant to be asking the question, well, who did that? Have a look at verse 21 again. During the time, Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway, became angry and conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. You can just imagine the scene, can't you? Mordecai, sitting there minding his own business, he's sitting at the king's gate. That is a way of referring to a position in Xerxes' court. The king's gate is the place where legal, civil, ceremonial business took place. If you want to do something official in Xerxes' kingdom, you go to the king's gate to get it done. It's a bit like going to the forum in Hemel Hempstead. That's where you go to get stuff done. And that is where Mordecai just happens to be sitting. We're not told why he's there. He's just there. You could say he just happens to be in the right place at the right time. You might say that's a coincidence. We met Mordecai last time, didn't we? We saw he was from a line of Jewish people. He was given a whole family background, a family background that connected him to a prime family in Israel. But his family, they'd been exiled. Exiled under Nebuchadnezzar, exiled into Persia. You see, in many ways, the Jews of Mordecai's day, they just happened to still be around. Against the odds, the Jews just happened to have been spread around the world. Some of them just happen to be in Susa near Xerxes' palace. And one of them just happens to be sitting at the king's gate. Coincidence? And it's there that Mordecai finds out about the plot to assassinate King Xerxes. I mean, that was a common fare in those days. In fact, history tells us that is how Xerxes actually made his end. But fortunately for Xerxes this time around, Mordecai just happens to be there. Mordecai just happens to find out about the plot. He tells Esther. Esther reports it to the king. It gets investigated, and these two officials get impaled on poles. And it's all recorded into the historical record. It's a short, punchy story, isn't it? It stands out from the rest of the book as its own little bit because of its shortness, its brevity. But it's all reported in a way that makes you question, well, who did what? If you look carefully, who told Mordecai? Look carefully, who investigated? Look really closely. Who was it who impaled? Look even closer. Who was it who recorded it down? See, the author is quite striking when you read it. Puts everything passively. Everything just happens on its own. Everything is recorded in a way that's meant to make you go, well, who did that? All these things happen, but we're not told who was behind it. We're not told who did it. From one perspective, you might read this story and think it's a short story of a sequence of random events. Random events that just happen one day, one random day, to one random man who just randomly happens to be there. But is that what the author wants us to think? Well, I don't think so. So who did it? Well, the Bible tells us that history is not just a sequence of random events. There is no such thing as a coincidence in God's world. And so as we come to read Esther, we read it alongside the rest of the Bible, it should make us question that. Is it just random that Mordecai was there? Or is there something bigger to the fact that Mordecai, from the people of Israel, was put there at the right time, place at the right time? There's our first hint. But the second thing, the second way we can see what's going on here is the way the author hints at what's going on as we look back on the story. Now, Tim was telling me he'd read the whole of Esther in preparation for tonight. That's good homework. So this won't be spoilers for him. Sorry if it's spoilers for anyone else. But in these three verses of Esther, the whole story of Esther gets told. If you know the story of Esther, you notice the whole story of Esther is there. You could summarise the big points of Esther, of Esther's storyline, in those three verses. Just think about what happens in the rest of the book, if you know. Mordecai happens to be around when something happens with the king's advisor. Mordecai finds out about the plot that's going on. He finds out what's going on. He reports it to Esther. Esther tells it to the king. The king kills or hangs the perpetrator. Then the episode gets recorded down and people rejoice. I mean, that is what happens in broad brushstrokes for the rest of this story. The whole story of Esther appears in very seed form, right here. You'd only notice that that is the case in retrospect, as you look back. We only see that as we look back on the story. So only as we look back on the details later on do we notice that. And I want to put it to you this evening. Isn't that how we see God at work today? As you go through your day, as you will go through your day tomorrow, small, meaningless things are going to happen. But if you take the time at the end of the day to reflect back on what's happened, you might see that all those things were working together. Or perhaps you can go even bigger than that, bigger events that seem totally unrelated. When you look back, you can see a hand at work. If we're reading Esther carefully, we'd notice that certain words appear. Words that we've seen before in Esther chapter 1. See, we have Mordecai sitting, just like Xerxes was sitting earlier, the only phrase that's used that way. We have men becoming angry, just like Xerxes did in chapter 1. Same phrase that was used there, only other place it's used. We have words being written down in the presence of the king, just like chapter 1. In fact, the name of those two officers, Bigthana and Teresh, well, they sound quite like Bigtha and Tarshish of chapter 1. You might be thinking that doesn't sound very similar. If you were to write them out in Hebrew, you'd spell them basically the same. And just like Vashti, those two royal officials lose their royal position. I mean, is this deja vu? When certain things start happening, you're meant to think maybe they're going to happen again. You're going to wonder what's going to happen next. There's a whole load of things there that are going to happen next. But as we read through the Bible, you are taught that patterns repeat. So we have an expectation that these things are going to happen again. Are we going to see Esther telling the king about a plot again? Are we going to see someone hung on a pole just like these guys again? Let me tell you now, put out your suspense. The answer is yes. The rest of the story does play out again. The same words, the very same words, get used again in Esther. Exactly the same phrases. It's like the author has done this deliberately. This small story, seed form, the rest of the story. Because this pretty random, this seemingly meaningless event in just three verses here in Esther 2 has far more meaning in retrospect. The things that happen here are going to come up again. And just like that, for us, we're unable to fully comprehend the meaning of individual events without the benefit of hindsight, without looking back and thinking over them. Let me prove that to you. We can do it with the history of Christchurch Hemel. Do you remember 2014? We lost a school building. Coincidence? That was an issue at the time, wasn't it? Can we see God's hand at that? I know of one person in this church family who had a flyer posted through their letterbox. Just a random letterbox, a flyer went through it, brought them to Christchurch Hemel, brought them into the church family. There is story after story, I'm sure you can tell stories here, of so-called coincidences here in our 7 to 8 years as a church too. See, in the day-to-day life, we don't get a running commentary of God's actions in the world. But when we look back, we see that perhaps, just perhaps, there was a hand behind all those things after all. There is a sequence to history, a sequence of ordered events, because things are going somewhere. It's not just a random collection of coincidences. There is a design, there is a purpose. There is not just pitiless indifference. Is it just maybe that something more is going on? Hint number two from our passage this evening. And I want to say that we can be on pretty secure footing with all of this because of the promise. That's the final thing to think about this evening. You see, we don't see the name God appear in the book of Esther. But we have seen the people of God in the book of Esther. Those who've been trained to look through the Bible lens see there's far more going on here. I mean, I hinted at it earlier, but this Mordecai, he's not just a random guy. He happens to be a member of the people of God. And it's because of God's promise that that people are here. It's God's promise that has kept this people together. And from one man, Abraham, down into Egypt, out and up into the land of Canaan. And it's God's promise of justice that brought that very people through Nebuchadnezzar's hand down into exile. And it's God's promise that means that this people are still intact, even in Susa, even in Persia. Just notice there, God still keeps his promises even in the midst of mess, even in the midst of his people messing up, even in the midst of confusion, even in the mess of Susa, the mess of last time's passage, the moral ambiguity of what was going on in those previous verses, God is still working. God is still working to keep his promises. Just think what hasn't happened by the time Esther's written. See, God had promised to bring about a saviour for the entire world, from the Jewish people, who is going to bless the entire world. At this point in Esther, at this point in salvation history, that promise hasn't yet happened. And so as you see God's people here in Susa, here in Persia, it is a pointer that God is still active in the world of Esther. As Mordecai just happens to be sitting there at the king's gate, he is a tangible, he is a real demonstration of God at work, of God's promises in the world. And when you think about that, the same is still true today. In a world that is missing God, God's covenant people, the salt of the earth, the church, are the pointer that God is still active in the world today. Even in the mess, even in the moral ambiguity of our world, even when his people mess up, God is still working to keep his promises. And let me tell you tonight, he's going to carry on doing that until Jesus returns. In Esther's day, it might seem that Xerxes is the king of the world, the king of the castle. But in all of that, God's kingship trumps the follies of seemingly powerful Xerxes. Just because God's name is in front and center doesn't mean that God isn't active. He may seem invisible, but God is still invincible. So what difference does that make to us? Well, the question this evening is, do you believe that? Do you believe that God works in all things to bring about his plan? In fact, do you believe that God can use the drunken slurs of King Xerxes to his own ends? Do you believe that God can use the refusal of Queen Vashti to bring about his purposes? Do you believe in a God who can use seemingly random people who happen to be in the right place at the right time in a far-off land to bring about his plan to bless the entire world? I reckon it could be easy for us on a Monday morning to act as if God is dead or that he's uninvolved as we see things unfolding in our world. It could be easy to believe that at the bottom, there is no design, there is no purpose, there is no evil or good. There is just nothing but pitiless indifference. As the powerful are dominating, as the godless are rampant, as the weak just seem to be caught in the middle. But as things happen, we have to ask, well, who did that? As we look back in history and we see the people who ignored God being used by God to drive forward God's plan, to bring about a much better king than Xerxes, to bring about a much better kingdom than Persia. Just think about it for a moment. Xerxes' lavish lifestyle, Vashti's refusal to obey him, both used by God for his purposes. Just think about it even more. Neither of those people actually worshipped God. Neither of them were even aware of God's involvement. Yet God used those moments, Xerxes' pride, Vashti's defiance, to put Esther in her position. A conspiracy to assassinate the king and Mordecai's random involvement, seemingly meaningless, but oh so important. In fact, we get hinted at the end of this little section, Esther 2. We end with this moment being recorded for future use. If you know the story of Esther, it's going to come up again. And verse 22, our very first reference to Queen Esther. The so-called coincidences of Esther 1 and 2 have led us here. In our world today, in our world tomorrow, right now, God is using all things to bring about his plan. Whether we see them or not, whether we're aware of them or not. So this evening, do you believe that? You see, you can't play chess with God. God's always going to win because he's got the whole thing covered. We're going to see what he's going to do next. But as we can see here, we can trust that he is in complete control. And that is great news. Don't you agree?
Thank you so much for listening. Any feedback or questions can be sent to podcast@david-couch.com, and I'll catch you again next time.